This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
All right, so the time has gone 12 minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock. As is customary on a Thursday, we always have a leadership dialogue. And I think now that all the T's have been crossed and the I's have been dotted and, you know, oaths have been sworn and agreements have been signed in, I think we can say fairly that the seventh administration is now up and running. So the question now, beyond the broad vision of a national dialogue, is what is in the inbox of the president and his national executive? What should be in the inbox of the provincial premiers and their national executives? What are key priorities? And how do you go about modeling the solutions that are required? Our conversation today is with somebody who's had a lot of experience around how you make public utilities profitable. What is the financial modeling? How you craft policy in such a way that it gives you the outputs you want, both academic but also fiscally, in terms of institutions of higher learning. How do you turn around a national public broadcaster? How do you invest in core infrastructure like energy and make sure that the electricity that people need is provided, but the operations are also streamlined and that there's affordability and accountability? How do you make the levers, the mechanics of government work in such a way that there's value for money for the taxpayer, but there's also accountability of how those tax rands and cents are utilized? We're speaking to Lerato Nage, the chairperson of the board of the Black Management Forum's investment company and also the chief executive of Gea Capital. In his extensive corporate career, he has been a CFO for the NSFAS, for the South African Broadcasting Corporation. He has been the chairperson, so he's played that oversight role at City Power, which unfortunately is in the news at the moment with their levy. And he has been on the advisory board of directors for Longmark Equity Partners, and on the on the investment strategy for the higher education sector. And I'm going to assume that's both private and public universities. He sat on the audit committee of various public entities, including the city of Johannesburg with its budget of over 77 billion rands. He sits there saying, this is probably the best use of your money. Refuse collection, municipal roads, dealing with the, you know, the asset register of the buildings. I don't know. He can tell us how they audit the city of Johannesburg, having sat in that audit committee. And I think it's people like this who would form the brains trust of how you should just get up and running with the seventh administration. And so, Lerato Nage, good morning.
Morning, Lerato, and the listeners at home and at work. Thanks for having me today.
It is my pleasure. And so, you know, so that you're not confused as listeners, it's two Leratos in conversation. He'll say, Lerato, this is my answer. I'll say, Lerato, this is the question. The male voice is Lerato. The female voice is Lerato. It is what it is. For the love of country. Lerato Nage, just I've given a sense of your CV, your extensive experience in public and private investments, the city of Johannesburg, the SABC, NSFAS. So you've straddled many, many domains of public administration. And what did you learn?
Firstly, before I get into that, let me take this opportunity to congratulate President Ramaphosa and wish him well as he embarks on the seventh administration. I mean, we always complain as the public that the gentleman takes long. Mm-hmm. But to put a cabinet that is put together, I think this, I'll give him 8 out of 10.
Okay.
In that regard. And we wish him well because it's not an easy job to manage the different constituencies. But he has shown himself to be an astute deal maker, as it were, in government. And what one has learned, I mean, if you look at the government of national unity, my career and coming into now being in the private sector, government already has structural reforms that are taking place. In National Treasury, that's what they call Operation Vulindlela. I mean, as the public, we've been complaining about electricity. The president put in there Mr. Ramakgopa, and we can see already with the chairman there, with the executive there, and the new CEOs, the changes are there. Right. It's still at the early stages. The changes are there. Government is also looking at water under Operation Vulindlela. It's looking at transport, as we saw the issues that took place at Transnet with the ports. I'm one of the of our investee companies actually works in the cable, Cable Tapes Africa. And one of the challenges we had with the Durban port was that our goods will stay there forever, and it affects the business. And if we do air freight, it's expensive. So we are really happy, and we are willing to support the government to make sure that we unlock the backlogs. They've already started with the Cape Town port. And then there's digital communication also. That is very important. And these network industries, as they are referred to, they are the bedrock of economy. And as you can see, government is not all over. And as a private sector, they have taken our inputs into account. And then the other one is student accommodation. I mean, you've asked me what have I learned throughout my career. Mm. I mean, I was the CFO at Nesfos, and I was also, for my sins, I was the acting CEO for a period of a year, when Sizwe Ngcasana was the board chair there. One thing I've learned, and I did an interview with one of the broadcasters, was that education is at the heart of transforming this economy. If you look at electricity, water, transport, digital communication, you need skilled individuals, right? And government has gone in too deep with National Student Financial Aid Scheme. They've put in close to 80 billion. That's a lot of money that they've put into the scheme to capacitate the individual that are coming from very poor background. And now the next lever is this Operation Vulindlela to make sure that we can absorb the scheme or the students that are coming out of the scheme. And then there's the YES program that has been put in place to make sure that we attract those individuals. So yeah, in short, before I go further, the structural reforms are very important for us. And we are looking with bated breath from the private sector. Right. As the investment community, to see what the new government of national unity is going to deliver. Yeah. We've got enough policy, we've got extensive policy, we need delivery, and we need delivery at speed.
Okay, so at speed versus the slow pace at which the president in the last administration made decisions. I'm wondering here, obviously, introducing a policy reform and then actually executing the reform is a process.
Yeah.
So we can't expect that reforms are introduced in January and by June you see results. It takes time. But does it take as much as 5 years?
It shouldn't. But where the voters, essentially the citizens of the country said, we want a mix of skills, mix of political ideology, but execution. And one point, if you look at the Minister of Education, it's a very young lady who's there, and we expect energy in that sector to be able to push through. If you look at, for example, Minister in International Relations, it's a young individual, very bright individuals, and we expect a lot from that. But then if you look at the stability in the finance sector, they're still the same ministry, deputy minister, they've just added a bit there. It shouldn't take 5 years, but where we are, the point I'm trying to put across is that where we are as a country, we do not have 5 years.
Okay.
It's low economic growth, and we need to get on with the work that we are meant to do.
Okay. What do you make of the government of national unity? You're giving them plaudits. You're even saying that the president is an astute negotiator. I'll accept that because, you know, if we're going to do the proportionality mathematics that the DA has insisted on, then the DA should have gotten more seats in the national cabinet. But it didn't work out like that. So you can see that President Ramaphosa, certainly within this context, is a shrewd, shrewd negotiator.
Yeah.
He knows how to include, but he also knows how to protect his side.
Yeah.
And he also knows how to, what shall we call it, appease and give concessions. But when all of that is said and done, is this mix of ideologies, parties, people going to yield services for South Africans? Because it's all good and well to also say you've got young ministers. Youth may mean energy, but it doesn't necessarily mean wisdom and know-how.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we'd have to wait and see. But from your sense, maybe let me ask it this way. The markets responded very positively. The Rand even breached 18 Rand. So the markets somehow believe this composition is the right formula. Why? Why do the markets think that?
Firstly, there's checks and balances. So gone are the days of a strong man politics, strong party politics. There's checks and balances in the system. Infrastructure is a different ministry there. And I do take your point that some of the ministers are new. It will take them a bit of while to hit the ground running. But there's policy already in place at the respective departments, right? So there's no need to re-engineer the wheel. We, okay, as the people of this country, as the economy, you've just referenced the rent, we do not have capacity for populist politics.
Yeah.
We need men and women who will come into the system and hit the ground running.
Yeah.
I mean, you are talking about the youth and you don't give much credit to the youth, and fair enough. And I'll reference myself.
Please, I want to correct that. Yeah. I'm not giving credit to the youth. I'm saying just the assumption that because people are young, they're energetic.
Okay.
It's an assumption.
Right. I'll reference myself. it's a fair assumption. We need to capacitate the next level of leaders in the country. If you look at the band of 35 to 50, those are the people who are highly skilled, who have a measurable experience behind them. They need to be capacitated. If you take myself, I was a CFO at SABC at the age of 30.
Wow.
I had no business being in that boardroom. It was the events that took place and I was in that boardroom. But I was fortunate enough that I had a board that was very patient with me. The board that protected me and shielded me from the politics of the day, of the time, at the point in time. And all I can do was to focus on my area of competency, being the numbers and reporting. And I grew into my own. Mm. And then I transitioned. I went to City Power. I started as an ordinary board member there. Lyle Bethlehem was the chair. Mm. Those people capacitated me. Mm. The following year, I became the chair of the audit committee. And then in 2019, I became the chair of the board.
Mm.
If you do not invest in people and capacitate them, you are leaving them to sit there and be disgruntled.
Mm.
And that will be a sad day in our country when we leave the youth out.
Okay.
There will be mistakes that the youth make because, as you correctly pointed out, there's no wisdom. But the leaders that are, some of the leaders that are in government, 2029, they may not be around because of age. Now, if we leave this gap, this crop of individuals who are capacitated, and we are not bringing them into the system,
yeah,
we are doing justice for our country.
And the corollary is also true, is that the government, by and large, has been led by the generation who are now over 70.
Yeah.
And we find ourselves in this quagmire.
Mm.
So age itself is not a sign of wisdom.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Fair play. Let's deal with the negative numbers. I'm going to do the negative reports first. As we speak right now, and you spoke about Operation Vulindlela, there's a huge infrastructure backlog in South Africa. But not just that, not just debilitating declining infrastructure. I guess let me use that word, debilitated infrastructure. I think that's wrong, but anyway. But a decline in investments in public infrastructure by -3. Okay, so that's very disconcerting. And there's a reason why when you're driving on the highway, the fence along the highway looks rusted and broken. It's not being invested in.
Mm.
Okay, the roads are in disrepair. 12 million cars on the road, 4-lane highways, last built by the Mbeki administration. Nothing done since then. That's a problem. Decline of -3% in capital expenditure for infrastructure. Mining investments, I came across a figure, certainly for exploration, down 5%. That's very significant when you consider the global average. So, and it's got nothing to do with the fact that we are no longer gold mining, it's become deeper. Even exploration, the exploration budget is just not sufficient to see if there are any new strategic minerals. South Africa is still on the grey list. It was confirmed in Singapore this week. that the reforms haven't been sufficient enough to remove South Africa off a list of grey listing financial services, and concerns about whether this country is doing enough to combat money laundering and the like. Then we look at the capital inflows. Fortunately, we are seeing inflows into the country, but South Africa still ranks 66th out of 125 nations where investments come via the stock exchange. So there is a real disconnect in terms of the aspirations and the language of positivity and just the metrics on the ground.
Okay.
How do we change that?
All right. I will just reply broadly to the issues we've mentioned and just confine myself to my area of competence. But just going back to Operation Vulindlela, one of the things the reforms they're working on is the visa regime to attract the skills. You attract the skills, capital follows the skills, right? And why is, as government looked at the structural reforms, firstly is to reduce input cost, the cost of doing business, so that there's no capital flight that leaves South Africa. Mm-hmm. And all of these things that have to do with electricity, water, those are the input costs. So they are sorting out input costs, lower barriers to entry, and increase competition. So one gets a sense that as the long tenure that Competition Commission will take, whether approving or disapproving or rejecting mergers and acquisition transactions, that will be looked at. Because it affects all those issues that you've spoken of. But let's talk about infrastructure. And I will focus on purpose-built student accommodation. That is a public-private partnership. If you look at government as a finite port, sadly, is the truth. There's no money, but the money can go so far,
yeah.
Right? The private sector have come in and said to the university, we'll build beds for you, right? And they've invested close to 35 billion rand. So they've plugged that gap. If that had not been the case, the number, the minus 3% that you're referring to would have been worse. Okay. Now, what they're asking, because I work closely with them, is that we need policy certainty. One of the issues that have led to the capital flight and reduced infrastructure spending is the lack of policy certainty. You come in as Lerato, you are the Minister of Infrastructure. I come in as Nache tomorrow, I change. You know, so we need certainty. For example, NSFAS reduced the accommodation fee from 60,000 to 45,000 and took it back to 50,000. What the private sector is saying is that whether it's 45, whether it's 50, can we stick to that? And before you make any material policy change, notify us. We are an important stakeholder. Because once money is in the ground, once they've put in that investment, there's nothing they can do
about it. And when you say, can you stick to that, you mean from administration to administration or from minister to minister?
Administration to administration, minister to administer. So we have policy. The implementation of that policy sometimes tends to take the style of an individual rather than looking at the impact in the economy. Mm. Like, for example, there's 500,000 beds that are required for both university and TVET. Now, if there's a policy certainty, if there's going to be material changes from the Department of Higher Education and Training, because NSFAS is an implementing agency, then the private sector can sit and say, okay, here are the norms and standards. This is what you want. You're going to pay us this much. We will give you what you need. But it would be a bit unfair. In fact, not it would be. It is extremely unfair that you've already built and then tomorrow things change. And those are the challenges that we want government to address, and they are addressing to a large extent.
Okay. So for all those people who say, oh my gosh, now we're moving from neoliberal economics to free market economics, the economic revolution is not going to happen because investors want policy certainty. What I'm hearing you say, an analogy in my head, is when you buy a house or build a house and get a mortgage, you know you're in a 20-year arrangement with the bank and with the property developer. You build a house, and for 20 years you can plan. I'm always going to have a mortgage to pay for 20 years. But suddenly in year five, somebody comes in and says, Diliza Lemuzi.
Yeah.
And suddenly the structure is gone. The bank is still waiting for its money, and somebody wants to repurpose. That is the uncertainty. And you can't keep having these cycles where people just come and demolish the property because they feel like it.
And the sad thing is that, remember, you've got employees who are working in those structures. Mm. Now you have to let them go. Mm. So you're caught up in this
quagmire.
Yeah, you know, in this abusive cycle. But if there's certainty, there's those employees who form part of construction. It might be, you know, a short-term employment.
Yeah.
But then there's those employees who are part of facilities who will remain in those. So if you change the policy from, for example, 60 to 45, we have to let go of people.
Yeah.
You see it in the mining sector, the uncertainty around issuing licenses and other things that are related to that. You have the poorest of the poor suffering the brunt.
Yeah.
Now, if there's certainty, if the new people who are coming into the party here, as it is government of national unity, and they put the country first, and everybody says, you are good at doing A, I'm good at doing B, let's work together. Then the people who are saying, oh, we are moving to free market, we're not going to benefit, they will be cushioned from all these challenges. Right now, it's everybody for himself.
Mm.
You are having employment today, and I'll keep on referencing the people's bill student accommodation, because that is the infrastructure and an investment that the private sector has come in and closed the gap that the public sector did not have.
Mm.
Now, if we do not pay those service providers on time, it is the students on the street.
Yeah. Okay. You know, tough conversation, but delivered in a very sanguine way. News time.
Power Talk, the leadership dialogue.
Yes, and it's a leadership about country. You know, we've heard a lot of things about the need for a national dialogue, the kind of conversation across constituencies, across sectors, that says this is what the country needs. As a mining expert, this is what I say. As a teacher, this is how I see it. As a doctor or a nurse, these are my experiences. As a young person, these are my aspirations. And that's all good and well. But what we've been told is South Africa Incorporated needs interventions today. In fact, it needs interventions yesterday. And a national dialogue, whilst very important, is not going to unlock the potential right now. And so what are the things that can be done right now that help to grow the economy from a paltry 0.7, 0.1, that are going to sort out what needs to be sorted out in healthcare, that's going to make sure that talented students are funded and housed, that's going to support the innovation economy and these innovation centers in places like Cape Town, because that's where a lot of that venture capital and startups, that ecosystem exists. The stuff that's going to get artisanal mining up and running, but also get the criminals punished. What is the stuff that's going to happen right now as we continue to dream big? And so our conversation today is with that very realist, that very realistic person who says it's good to dream, but this is how you get it done procedurally, financially, and this is how you model a solution. Lerato Nage, chairperson of the board of the Black Management Forum's Investment Committee, CEO currently at Kia Capital, former CFO for NSFAS and the SABC, former board member for an investment company that was looking into higher education as a whole in South Africa, both public and private. Chairperson formerly of the Audit Committee of the City of Johannesburg, chairman of City Power. The nuts and bolts. Is that fair to describe you as that, Lerato? Is that, you know, the premier was here half an hour ago dreaming, and I don't mean it in a bad way, the dreamer, the vision, you would be the person to say, okay, Premier, this is how it needs to get done.
Yeah.
And so when you sit in these fora and you sort of say to everybody, the dreams are okay, but this is the reality.
Yeah.
How hard are those conversations?
I mean, they're not very easy, and there's different leadership styles. But before I even get to that, I mean, I'm reminded by a quote from the Kumba CEO. You know, when she said, in our leadership, in our day-to-day, we must embody kindness and the power of positive thinking.
Mm.
You know, as we are dealing with this tough issues that face us, we must also not be despondent. We must have a positive thinking. And there's different leadership style. And I'll reference the Black Management Forum investments because that's where I find myself, because it's directly related. The portfolio is directly related to what is happening in the country. I mean, if I take myself right now, having been appointed, and I would like to say congratulations to the board for appointing me to be their leader, is that it's a pace-setting leadership. In other words, you come in, as I came in now in June, and I look at our governance structure, and I said, but we are not optimally structured. You know, we need to make certain changes. We reduce committees from 4 to 2 so that we are efficient in what we are doing. We are in an investment company, not an operational company. But equally, there's the coach leadership style. What do I mean by that is that I walked in there and some of the board members are still coming up in the ranks. They need to be coached. But the executive also are coming up in the ranks. They have not reported to the board. They need to be coached. That's where you need to be kind with them. And I asked the board that we need to have a leadership coach for these professionals so that we can get them going. Another thing that we put in there, we said we need wellness. Because I've seen organization, and that plays out in the country, is that you want people to perform, but they're not well. Mm. You talk about impact, but the environment in which people operate and work in are toxic.
Yeah.
Now, we want our executives and our board members, some of them sit in our subsidiary companies, to embody the values of Black Management Forum Investment Company, that we look after you. When they go and sit on those boards, when they work with executives in this low-growth economy where it's tough, they can at least embody those values of being kind and being positive in the way they deal with the challenges that are facing them. So that's the leadership style. I mean, you look at City Power, for example, back in 2019, we saw the challenges of electricity. And I said to the board then, and Douglas Gibson was a board member there, and he was also my mentor. I mean, because he's quite a senior individual, whom I would call when I have challenges. So leadership also, it's not about all knowing.
Yeah.
I mean, I back myself to do extremely well simply because I always ask for advice.
There's many things you've said. I just want to go back to the be kind, mentor and coach, and don't bring toxicity into the workplace. You're just echoing the sentiments of Dr. Lulu Gwagwa, the chairperson of Barlow World. And she said something really important, which I found at the time quite intriguing, right? That she would focus on this as a chairperson of a huge conglomerate. Yeah. But she echoed these sentiments, is that CV for CV, we can match.
Yeah.
People have gone to school. People have the credentials. Yeah. So many people are occupying spaces that on paper they deserve to occupy. Mm. But things fall apart, not because people don't really know how to do the job, but because people don't know how to manage themselves.
Yes.
And people don't know how to manage their prejudices and their traumas.
Yeah.
And so what is very important when you come into a leadership position is to be self-aware.
Yeah.
Be self-aware, what are your triggers? Be self-aware, what are your responses to those triggers? Be self-aware of your prejudices. I'll use a simple example. She did not say this part. But if you know you're uncomfortable around the subject of homosexuality, you need to know that it's a discomfort. So that when you meet her customers or colleagues who are members of the LGBTQI community, you become aware of your limitations and not start projecting on them. But it takes a person to be aware that they have those limitations.
I can use myself as an example. Right now, where the organization needs a leadership of a pace setter. You set expectation on yourself and you run.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it means that I've got blind spot insofar as doing extensive stakeholder management.
Okay.
Now, earlier, before you brought in a very important point, I said that I beg myself to do well. Because I always ask for advice.
Mm.
I always ask the so-called stupid question. Like even yesterday with the producer, I asked, what are they going to ask? How is it going to work? As basic as it is, right? Like the support member there, Musebeti, he's very good at stakeholder management. And we've started reviewing the portfolio. And he will say, Chair, but you need to notify the chair from that other company. And in my mind, I'm just looking at increasing net asset value. I'm just looking at efficiencies. I'm looking at how we can move with speed, make sure that we extract value.
Yeah.
Right. Now, if you know you have that blind spot, this Leratanagi, it is very important that you listen to the other individual and actually act on what they're saying. What did I do? Please give me the number. Then I contacted the chair. Hey, chair, this is what I'm doing. Please know that I'm not stepping on your toes. We are just implementing post-monitoring investment valuation for these entities. As you know, that they need to perform, we need to extract value. What that did, it made everybody to settle down.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. So communication matters. Being self-aware of your blind spots matters.
Yeah.
Listening even to your subordinates matters. And not going into an environment thinking you know everything matters.
And then the last point, Lerato, people want to be seen and to be heard.
And appreciated.
Right? So when we put in mentorship and coaching for our employees, when they go to the investee companies, they know that this board has high expectations on them, but it sees them and it values them. They are not just a robot or machines that are expected to perform. And when they break down, we can just replace them tomorrow. Okay. That is not the culture we want.
All right.
That's not the culture we are building.
I know you've moved on, but I'd like you to reflect on City Power because you mentioned it. And I'm sure you've been following the news this week. And to be fair, we did speak to the general manager on tariffs. But really, it's unsettled many of the residents in Joburg who are on the City Power grid. Just a unilateral imposition of a 230 rands levy before you even utilize and consume the electricity. But in itself, through NERSA, the electricity tariffs have gone up by 12.7%. So it just feels as if the costing of electricity is getting more and more expensive, from the service charge all the way through to the pricing of energy per kilowatt hour. And so many of us are trying to understand, all good and well, what Dr. Ramakgopa is doing and what the Eskom board has done. And let me say, today I got a message that says today is 100 days of no load shedding. I don't know whether we applaud that or are we applauding a fish for swimming, but it's 100 days today officially of zero no load shedding. But how do we get these metrics right so that we all understand as South Africans why we're paying more for electricity, but there's still this intrinsic threat of load shedding, why there need to be service costs, how does the money flow in the sector?
You know, I need to be careful how I respond to this one because I don't like casting aspersion to people who are there when I was there. But Johannesburg, city of Johannesburg, is actually an embodiment of policy uncertainty. It is, and we as the residents, we are bearing the brunt of that. There was this administration, and I will talk about, because we were under Herman Mashaba as the mayor there. I mean, we had come up with an energy mix because we were seeing where we were going. And we were saying, if our consumer and industrial customers, the big, large power consumers, are moving off the grid, let's follow them. You know, let's get a grid charge. Let's follow them. Let's assist them to get off the grid so that we can be there with them on the renewable energy space and start making money with them. You know, follow the customer, as it were. But as you know, 2019 December, there was a change in administration that led to a lull of 2 years.
Yeah.
Then we are where we are with the current leadership. And that has firstly killed the confidence from you and I. There's a 200 rand surcharge. Charge. Yeah. No one can afford that.
Yeah.
And who suffers are the poorest of the poorest that suffer from that 200 levy charge. And when that happens, you have a skills flight, right? The new administration comes in. They don't like how you speak or how you look. They exit you. They bring in other people. And as you've said, CV to CV, you are all the same. But new people need time to settle in. Mm-hmm. And then another administration comes in because there's emotional confidence. Mm-hmm. And once at national level, at SALGA, we sort out those issues. That once we've appointed a mayor or a mayoral committee, we must give them at least a certain amount of time before we come back again and say motion of no confidence. Then we remove that person. And then we end up with people who are not suitable for the positions that they occupy.
And doesn't this then speak to this idea of, one, professionalizing the public and civil service, depoliticizing it, and that there just should be aspects of municipal and general government management that should not fall victim to whatever the politicians are doing at that political disagreement level. So whether or not the Premier announced a cabinet, it should not stop the city of Johannesburg from doing its job.
Yeah.
The traffic officers must be on the road. The traffic lights must be working. The water should be flowing from the taps, electricity from city power. It shouldn't really matter what's happening inside the legislature.
Yeah. So we have a peculiar challenge in the country. You have the political regime that is merely 30 years old, so it's still young. But you've got the needs of the country and the low economic growth that forces us to be mature, right? So what you've just alluded to is that we may bicker at the political level, but administratively, we must get on with it. And that's what the economy and us, the citizens of this country, are forcing the politicians to do. And that reflected on the elections, that no one large party won, that we coming here as government of national unity. And administrators are allowed. Like one of the things that we proposed was that director generals at the department must at least be given 10 years, you know, whether it's renewable or non-renewable, so that we have stability. So that we don't have a situation where another administration comes in and say, no, we need to change this. We need to put Lerato Mbele. We need to remove her. We need to put Lerato Naga. That causes the instability. And we end up in a patching situation where we are patching with 200 tariff there just to get revenue. Mm-hmm. Now, that is not sustainable because you can keep on billing, increasing the rates. If there's no money in the system, you'll end up with a high debtors book.
Yeah.
So revenue looks good, but cash in your bank is not there. And that's number one. Number two, one of the peculiar problems we find ourselves in is that you have a Lerato who is an accountant or an HR professional running an engineering company. It means that the solutions that you come up with to the problems that are facing you, they're very complex, they're very long, and you can't implement them.
Mm.
So we need to match skills with the problems that we are facing. Right. And we do not have tomorrow or the day after tomorrow. We have today to be able to sort out those issues.
And this speaks to the professionalization of public administration and separating the politics from actual administration. You've spoken a lot, and obviously it's because of your experience at NSFAS when it was first established, around student housing. But what about student funding? We've got a new Minister of Higher Education.
That policy remains. So maybe just for the benefit of the listeners. So NSFAS, before it was a loan and bursary scheme, right? Then there was a HEFA commission that I presented to and the CEO at the time. I think it was around 2016. And then they resolved on certain things. And then the previous president, President Zuma, on December 2017, announced fee-free education. And it's very important that it is not free education. It's a fee-free education, meaning that somebody has to pay for that.
Just not you, the student.
Now, one of the changes there was that NSFAS will no longer fund you for an academic year, but will fund you for a course of study. Before then, it was N plus 2, now it's N plus 1. Mm-hmm. So now when you are in the system and you are doing a bachelor's degree for 3 years, you are funded for 4 years. Obviously, you have to pass these criteria there. Government has put in a lot of money, as I've already indicated, around 80 billion rand. They've gone in too far, too deep for a very long time. And now we are at a point where there's no going back. The scheme is just too important to fail.
Mm.
And they've brought in Freeman Nomvalo there. And one of the things he has done, and I must commend him on it, is that he is consulting with the relevant stakeholders. Get the views of differing people. I mean, you are talking about the sage, the engineers. Get the views of differing people. But also, we don't have the luxury of students being out.
Yeah.
So insofar as government funding, I mean, I think for the next 5 years or MTF period of 3 years, government has allocated 50 billion rand for both TVET, for both infrastructure and the universities.
Yeah.
So the funding is there and it must be kept. Because those, the NSFAS students largely are the SASA, you know, the poorest of the poor, the marginalized.
Yeah.
So it is very important. But also we need to get the likes of Vulindlela going, Operation Vulindlela, so that those skills can be absorbed into the economy.
And they will sort of pay their way back to South Africa once they are productive, employed citizens through their taxes.
And so you do need the youth for their youth.
I'm not anti-youth. I'm under old. I'm in that category that you've referred to. I was just saying, you know, it's just this idea that, because young people are in the room, suddenly there's a whole lot of wisdom and energy and smarts. If that was the case, things wouldn't be happening in France as they're happening as we speak. You know what I mean? But the reverse is also true. If there were more youth in government, maybe things would have turned out very differently for the government itself. Okay, other sectors of the economy, we seldom talk about agriculture. There's a new Minister of Agriculture, and it was interesting that he gets agriculture and agribusiness, but not land reform and the transformation issues. But be that as it may, it's a sector of the economy that's very important. We've got food security issues in the country.
Yeah.
But in terms of foreign investment, it only attracts 0.2%. A lot more money could be utilized. And I'm not just referring to foreign investment. We need local investments in farming. But we know that a lot of the farming inputs are imported. So those dollars do need to come into this economy, the farming economy. So how do we build resilience there?
So some of the challenges are the adjacent sectors. Mm. You get transport, for example, at the ports, right? So if South Africa exports most of their produce, and if they're stuck at the port, they get damaged.
Yeah.
And that's what government has looked at, that the challenges might not be in this sector in agriculture, might be the adjacent sector. Some of the input costs was electricity. If you have to buy generators, you have to buy diesel, you know, the cost of producing these fruits or vegetables becomes prohibitive, right? So food security is very important. We need to export our goods out into the country. There's been a new AGOA agreement that was signed to make sure that there's stability in Africa, and so far as the importation or exportation of goods is important. You look at the chicken business also. Mm. The tariffs needs to be sorted out around avian influenza. Yes. That needs to be sorted out. But I always say, you can come up with the best solution, but if you implement or you pronounce on a best solution 24 months later, it doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help anybody because so much damage has been done over time. So the efficiencies in the system, and I would like to think maybe that's where the wisdom of the president came in, to say, separate land reform, let's focus on agriculture, just like he did with electricity. Yeah. Let's have a focus so that then we can sort out this bedrock of our economy.
Right. And finally, as we say goodbye to you, I mean, you are chairperson of the Black Management Forum's investment company. So really, you would look at the mandate of the Black Management Forum, look at the resources available, and then say, where do we invest in a way that advances this agenda? So when we talk transformation for South Africa today and directing money towards transformation, what would you say the priorities ought to be?
Construction. You've spoken about infrastructure, and we are invested in construction. Education is a bedrock of our country. The investment firm is invested in education, financial services to be able to lend to small, medium, and enterprise business. The investment is invested there.
Okay.
But also in the unlisted investment space, we are in automotive. Through Roslyn Hub.
Okay.
And those are the sectors that needs to be supported so that then they can produce more. We don't want a situation that has taken place in Eastern Cape, right, where Mercedes-Benz is exiting. That is not good for our people. It's not good for the country. Yeah. But at least in Roslyn Hub, we're invested there.
Okay.
Cable Tapes, for example, Cable Tapes Africa, we are intermediary to a supplier to Eskom. And that is directly related to the generation of electricity and directly related to you and I to be able to do our work and boost the economy. So the investment mandate is to participate meaningfully in the economic development of our country.
All right. I'm going to ask you to give us a scorecard. Just one answer. You technically reflect and represent part of the market. When we say the market, we're talking about people like you. So here's this new government in the seventh administration. The stock exchange, well, certainly in terms of the rand and those investment flows, we see what their rating is. What's your rating? Is this a 50% government, a 60% government, a 70% government, a 100% government, 10 out of 10, 7 out of 10? What would you say?
Sure. I think let me be fair to them and give them a 6 out of 10.
Wow.
Let me give them a 6 out of 10 with a proviso that they must get on with it.
Summed up, Lerato Nage. 6 out of 10 for the start of the 7th administration. That's above pass. But you're going to have to do a lot to convince him and many like him that you've got what it takes. So get on with it, 7th administration. Lerato Nage, chairperson of the board of the Black Management Forum's investment company, CEO at Kia Capital. I was saying that in a room you need a sage, an engineer, an elite athlete, a dreamer. He's definitely the process guy. He's definitely the engineer in the room. News time.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.